So I was requested to speak something, some pastime of Krishna. I picked this pastime of Krishna, Krishna swallowing the forest fire. If that light can go out, we can probably see the screen better. Leave the fan on with the light out. Okay, so I'll begin with a little explanation from primarily from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and a little bit from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. For those who are not familiar, these are previous acharyas in our line of disciplic succession. And I'll summarize it first. They explain that when Krishna appears in this world, there's many purposes being fulfilled. One, of course, is he's enjoying pastimes. Another, in general, is he's demonstrating for everyone, qualified, unqualified, anyone, to get an understanding of the loving exchanges that exist in the spiritual realm. Krishna shows loving loving dealings, loving exchanges. And part of loving exchanges is arranged by Krishna's internal potency where he puts his devotee in some difficulty. And when the devotee is in difficulty, the surrender to Krishna intensifies. Krishna! Krishna comes and takes away the difficulty. He brings the difficulty to increase shelter in him, and then the difficulty goes. So that's the fire. The fire is a great danger. And the devotees turn to Krishna, and Krishna takes the fire away. Now, something that they say is that in the pastimes that Krishna performs in this world, for the most part, they're the same as the pastimes that Krishna performs in the spiritual world. He just literally descends when he comes. His whole spiritual abode comes with him. And so whatever he performs in Goloka, he performs here. However, there are some parts of Krishna's pastimes here, like his pastime of birth, as an example. There's no pastime of birth in Goloka. Or another example is there's the appearance of demons when Krishna appears here. In Goloka, there's no demons. And so there's some special purpose in the pastimes that he performs on earth. And the purpose is, I'll show you the text in just a minute, but the purpose is to help us, his devotees in this world, overcome obstacles on the path to go back to Krishna. There's Sanskrit terminology used. Krishna has eternal pastimes, Nitya Lila, and he has Naimittika Lila, or occasional pastimes. So the purpose of this particular pastime, Krishna swallowing the forest fire, is he withdraws the tendency to become engaged in sectarianism. So let's see. In Bhaktivinoda Thakur's writings, he uses these two terms, Nitya Lila and Naimittika Lila. Naimittika means occasional pastimes. Some occasional pastimes include Krishna's leaving Vrindavan to live in Mathura and Dwarka, his returning to Braja, his killing of various demons, and so forth. These pastimes are very useful for an aspiring devotee who is bound within the material world. Practicing devotees, sadhakas, That's us. Understand these occasional pastimes to be like negatively tinted reflections of the eternal pastimes. That's a whole mouthful. Negatively tinted reflections. I'll explain it later. And such sincere devotees, that's what we're trying to be, hope that by the influence of understanding the purpose of Krishna's performance of different occasional pastimes, their own various anarthas or unwanted material contaminations will be destroyed. So that's Krishna's intention. There's a special potency within these pastimes for that specific purpose. So a little summary. By remembering these pastimes, devotees aspire to destroy their own demoniac mentalities and tendencies. He gives as examples the Kaliya snake. Kaliya, Krishna's dancing on the hoods of the Kaliya serpent. The personification of malice polluted the Jamuna's waters, which are spiritual liquid. The Lord tortured him and banished him. The formidable forest fire, the form of quarrel amongst Vaishnava Sampradayas, was swallowed by the Lord in order to protect the land of Vraja. You can see there's different sources, Krishna Samhita, Chaitanya Shikshamrita. The first forest fire represents hatred and arguments between Vaishnavas or different religions and disrespecting each other's deities. It can also represent any type of clash or conflict. The second forest fire represents the attack of atheism and other agnostic philosophies on Krishna consciousness. This is one pastime that occurred twice. And the circumstances were different. But there were two forest fires in Krishna. We removed the two forest fires. It seems there's some significance that this is an especially great or significant danger. And I'll make a little reference to Shikshastakam for those of you who don't know who is Lord Chaitanya. There's Lord Chaitanya who 500 years ago traveled throughout all of India and by the congregational chanting of the holy name of Krishna, he gave, according to scripture, the primary means of awakening love of God and achieving spiritual perfection in this life. So he gave 8 ashtaka teaching, shikshastaka, for explaining about the chanting of the holy name and how it helps achieve that sublime perfection. And one of them, the line reads, Namna makari bahuta nija sarva shaktihi, which means that Bahuda. There are many names. Krishna is very kind and he has manifested in this world many, many of his names like Krishna and Govinda. And Nija Sarva Shaktihi. They're invested with all transcendental potencies. Those of you that are familiar with Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada's purport, for example, in the first chapter, Arjuna addresses Krishna by different names. Sometimes it's Rishikesh, master of the senses. Sometimes it's Ajita or Achyuta. So with each of the names of the Lord, it indicates an aspect of him, and to when invoking that name, it invokes that aspect of him, which means there's a certain potency, specific potency, within each one of Krishna's names that the potency to fulfill or achieve something in relation to him. So the same is true about Krishna's pastimes. There's a potency in this pastime when Krishna performs it, or when we hear it, or when we speak it, or when we remember it. And in this case, we're going to be both speaking and hearing and seeing images that portray the pastime. So within the pastime, part of the purpose of describing Krishna's pastimes is invoking these potencies. In this case, specifically to help remove the danger of sectarianism. We'll hear a little bit more about sectarianism at the end. So the pastime, the first forest fire begins at the end of the Kaliyanag Leela, Krishna's dancing of the hoods of Kaliya serpent. And he showed his feature as the best of dancers, because as the hoods of the serpent were moving, Krishna would dance on the hoods of the serpent. And he had 1,000 hoods, so Krishna was dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing and dancing. But his dancing was so heavy, because within Krishna the weight of the entire cosmic manifestation is there. So the hoods of Kaliya serpent were getting smashed and smashed and smashed and smashed, to the point where all of the envious, poisonous feature of Kaliya was gone. So Krishna subdued Kaliya, and then the wives of the Kaliya serpent came, and they offered prayers to Krishna to glorify him, and also ask Krishna to be kind and forgive Kaliya for all of his heinous activities and his envious spirit. Krishna obliged them. Kaliya also offered prayers, very much like the prayers of his wives. They worshipped Krishna, offered him very exquisite, ornamented jewels and garland and precious valuables. And then Krishna said, now you can go back to your home, Ramanaka Lake. Don't worry, Garuda won't give you any trouble, because that's why he was at this particular location, because he'll see on your hoods the impression of my feet, and he'll understand you've been given my mercy, so he won't harm you. So Kaliya left, and then Krishna left the lake. He had been there all day long. Now it was towards the end of the day. Krishna rose up out of the lake wearing divine garlands, fragrances, and garments, covered with many fine jewels and decorated with gold. When the cowherds saw him, they all stood up immediately. Just like an unconscious person's senses come back to life, filled with great joy, they affectionately embraced him. Here's Nanda Maharaj embracing Krishna. Mother Jasoda also came to embrace Krishna and Balaram, and the residents of Vrindavan, who had been in great distress seeing Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, were now greatly relieved. And because it was close to the end of the day, Krishna made a suggestion. It's very long distance between the river Jamuna and Nanda Maharaj's palace. The sun is nearly setting. Why don't we just stay here for the night by the side of the river Jamuna? The river Jamuna is our life and soul. So it would be very appropriate, very nice. Let us spend the night here. So Krishna made that suggestion. Nanda Maharaj agreed, and they all took rest. Laser pointers don't work on screens like this, but there's Nanda Maharaj, there's Mother Jasoda. On one side there's Krishna, and over here there's Balaram. There's Rohini, Balaram's mother. And of course, there's a number of cowherd boys, and there's the river Jamuna, taking rest by the side of the river Jamuna. The Vrijvasis looked at Krishna with unblinking eyes and said, "Let us rest here tonight. By good fortune, Kaliya has gone, but if he comes back to take revenge, then all of us can fight him with clubs. We'll protect you. Don't worry, Krishna. We're very strong. We have strong arms. We have good, stiff clubs. You'll be all right. Don't worry." They have that mode of they're going to protect Krishna. They found a place where there would be no possibility of being surrounded by fire, and where they could fulfill their desire to keep Krishna constantly in sight. So they laid down to take rest, and during the night, while all the people of Vrindavan were asleep, a great fire, because during the summertime in Vrindavan it's very dry, so there's always the risk of fire, and sure enough, a great fire blazed up within the dry summer forest. The fire surrounded the inhabitants of Braja on all sides and began to scorch them. And then commentary from Acharyas says, fire takes fuel from dry trees. When we become dry or weak in our bhajan or sadhana, fire may arise in the form of useless coral. So stay moist. With strong sadhana and strong bhajan. Then the residents of Vrindavan woke up extremely disturbed by the great fire threatening to burn them. Thus they took shelter of Krishna, the Supreme Lord, who by his spiritual potency appeared like an ordinary human being. Greatly alarmed, they took shelter of Krishna. That's very natural. They all took refuge of Krishna, thinking, Lord Narayan will surely empower this darling boy to protect us. They remembered what Gargamuni had said about Krishna during his birth ceremony. There's Gargamuni, who had performed the name-giving ceremony for a little child Krishna and Balaram in a goshal. The occasion was Nanda Maharaj had come to Mathura to pay his taxes. When he was there, he approached the priest of the royal family, who was very expert in astrology. Gargamuni was very expert. So Gargamuni was also very intelligent. He understood, if I give the name-giving ceremony for Nanda Maharaj, he'll put two and two together, because he's part of the royal family, and I'm giving this name-giving ceremony, so I'll do it in an obscure place where he won't know. Of course, Krishna really liked the place. It was the Goshal. And what Gargamuni had said when he did the horoscope for Krishna, he understood he was the Supreme Lord. But he didn't want to disturb the love, the spirit of love of Nanda Maharaj. So what he said was, Anena Sarva Durgani Yuyam Anjas Tarishyata, which is, by his grace only you will surpass all difficulties. And he also said that this child will be powerful like Narayana. He didn't say he was Narayana. So Gargamuni said, by this child's grace we will surpass all difficulties. Here's this fire difficulty. Krishna. So the Vrijvasis took complete shelter of Krishna with full faith. Somehow, Krishna would save them from the forest fire. So Krishna considered the circumstance. The forest fire was surrounding everyone. As you see, the cowherd boys are being asked to close their eyes. Krishna, Krishna, O Lord of all opulence, O Rama, possessor of unlimited power, this most terrible fire is about to devour us, your devotees. O Lord, we are your true friends and devotees. Please protect us from this insurmountable fire of death. We can never give up your lotus feet, which drive away all fear. Our commentators say they weren't exactly afraid of their lives. They were afraid of being separated from Krishna. That to them was worse than death. O Lord, this is our commentator Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, if we die in this fire, we'll be separated from your lotus feet. And this is unbearable for us, therefore, please save us just so we can keep serving you. Of the most fearful condition, on the left side, big, big, big forest fire, you see the deer standing in the river. But the forest fire is very fearful, but the greatest of all fear is separation from Krishna. And that's the wisdom of the cowherd boys. So Krishna saw the devotees were very disturbed. And since he's the Lord of the universe and the possessor of infinite power, he decided that he would swallow the terrible forest fire. So, the Sanskrit word is tam, meaning fire. And even though the fire was intolerably hot, Krishna swallowed it. And the explanation given, this is from our Acharya's commentary. This was because of Krishna's absorption in prema. Okay, Krishna was absorbed in prema, but the fire was very hot. So how is it possible to swallow a fire simply because he was absorbed in prema? And this is, again, Acharya's asking the question and then answering. The prema for his family members, his swajana, in order to protect them, began to search for a suitable power within Krishna to finish the forest fire. You get it? The prema within Krishna was searching for what the right shakti. Thinking, prema was thinking, how can this very young, tender boy swallow this intense fire? Thus his sangharika shakti, his power of destruction, swallowed the fire. Therefore, the description of Krishna being the possessor of power, shakti drik, and thus drinking the fire is only a figure of speech, since his samharika shakti withdrew the fire. That's Vishwanath. Krishna sometimes displays great intrinsic powers, though they are ordinarily hidden. Got it? Krishna has all potencies, nija sarva shaktis, just like each and every one of his names is invested with unlimited, inconceivable potencies. So Krishna acts through his potencies, and his principal characteristic, or one of his principal characteristics, is he possesses unlimited love for his devotees. So his potency of love, or prema, was searching, how can this little boy swallow the fire? So he was searching for the right potency, and the potency of destruction withdrew the fire. Sanatan Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur both suggest that Kaliya could have had a loyal friend, and the loyal friend assumed the form of a fire to take revenge. perhaps the forest fire was manifest by a demon who was a follower of Kamsa's. So that's the end of the pastime. After Krishna swallowed the forest fire, he went to this place, Davanalakund. Davanalakund is this tank, this kund in Vrindavan, and there Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys took their bath. And later, as Krishna became a little bit older, just after killing a Pralambasura, there was another big forest fire, and this was in the afternoon. It wasn't at night like this. Pralambasura was a demon who came to kill Krishna, and he's over here on the left. Over here on the right, that's Krishna, because the boys would wrestle, and whoever lost would have to carry the victor on his shoulders. So that's Sridham. Sridham is the elder brother of Radharani, and Sridham would regularly beat Krishna with wrestling. So Krishna would regularly have to carry Sridham. And here's some other boys being carried by other boys and so forth. Over here is Pralambasura. He was a demon, but he assumed the form of one of the cowherd boys, and he wrestled with Balaram, so he started carrying Balaram. But as he was carrying Balaram, he started heading away from all where all the other cowherd boys, and Balaram was having a great time. It's a great ride. But as the body of the demon got bigger and bigger and bigger, and Krishna called, "Watch out! This is not a cowherd boy, this is a terrible demon." And then Balaram understood, look at this form. So with one strike of his fist, he smashed Pralambasura in the head. And he went crashing to the ground, dead. And when Pralambasura was dead, it was time for lunch. The cowherd boys went and had their lunch. And after they had their lunch, some of the calves were wandering off for fresh grass. And as they were wandering and wandering, they entered into a grove of trees. And suddenly the grove of trees ignited into a big blazing fire. And "Oh, Krishna, Krishna, most powerful one, oh Rama, you whose prowess never fails, please save your devotees who are about to be burned by this forest fire and have come to take shelter of you." When Krishna is approached like that, he always extends his help. Again, our commentators remark that they called both Krishna and Balaram. Then they called Krishna alone. Why? Because Krishna has very special affection for his devotees, and they had realization that Krishna had very special powers. Even those who have some little relationship with you should not fall completely into distress because of the fire. We especially have taken shelter of you. We take you as the supreme shelter and are dedicated only to you. This means we cannot give up your lotus feet. You know that we have come along with the cows out of fear of the fire, but we do not pray for protection of our lives or the cows' lives. Therefore, do as you see fit. You know your nature and ours. That's Sanatan Goswami's commentary. So what did Krishna do? Krishna, hearing these words, he said to the cowherd boys, "Just close your eyes and don't be afraid." So one of the boys said, "Close our eyes. How's close our eyes going to stop the fire? And one of the other boys said, Krishna was considering, I'm ahead of myself, the boy should not see me swallowing the fire. It should be done without anyone seeing. Since my friends are so hot and tired, I should place them under the cool shade of the beautiful Bandira tree. So Krishna said, close their eyes. They have such affection for me. They don't think of their safety, they think of my safety. And if they see me swallowing this fire, they'll immediately enter into the fire to minimize the flames of the fire. So I have to have them close their eyes. Also, when the cowherd boys go back and they tell Nanda Maharaj and their parents what happened, Krishna swallowed the fire, they would faint. So he didn't want them to see because the parents would also be disturbed. Then one of the cowherd boys said, how can we escape from the fire just by closing our eyes? Then another cowherd boy said, listen, Krishna knows all kinds of mantras and mystical things and potions, and these things aren't effective if people see. You have to close your eyes. Oh, so they closed their eyes. And then? All right, we'll close our eyes. And then some commentators say that Krishna was very thirsty. So he turned the blazing fire into a tasty, cool drink. The fire became a small drop on Krishna's hand, and then, as Yogadisha, he drank it. But what method did Krishna swallow? By what method did Krishna swallow the fire? Since Krishna's Yogadisha, he used the method of yoga and employed his own Aishwarya Shakti to swallow the fire. Yoga Virya means the power to attain or achieve extraordinary things. The miracle of getting saved from the fire was caused by Krishna's Yoga Maya Shakti. They have different explanations of how this happened. Though the cowherd boys had seen Krishna's amazing power, that awareness could not cover the sweetness of their friendship with Krishna. So they just thought, Krishna is very wonderful, that's all. After seeing Krishna's supernatural power, the boys thought, Krishna might be a demigod, since he had done something impossible. But then they thought, well, since we're Krishna's friends, then we must also be demigods. Thinking like this, they were very happy. So now the cause of the fire, different acharyas have different suggestions. Sanatana Goswami said the fire was a friend of Pralambasura, again taking retaliation. Jiva Goswami gives another reason for the cause of the fire. Jiva Goswami says it was Krishna who created the fire. After all, he's the cause of all causes. So a doubting person might say, why did he do this? He put his friends into difficulty. Krishna wanted to test their love. Krishna already knows their love. What does he need? There's no need for him to test their love or the love of any of the residents in the Brijbasis. And their reply is, no. He's not testing for them, but for us. So we can see the quality of the Brijbasis' love. They just have Krishna's shelter, that's all. That's all they know. For example, a goldsmith, to prove to others that a particular metal is in fact gold may apply fire to show that it's gold. Krishna is demonstrating to us the quality of the residents of Vrindavan. That's the end of the forest fire pastime. Now comes some explanation of what we can understand and learn from the pastime. There's a very beautiful painting of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. From teachings of Lord Chaitanya, we read, Nimai Pandit, that's Lord Chaitanya, was naturally a soft-hearted person, though strong in his principles. He declared that party feelings and sectarianism were the two greatest enemies of progress. Strong statement. Two greatest enemies of progress. Party feelings and sectarianism. Krishna wants to destroy that. So here's a painting of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and his explanation. Again, from Sri Krishna Samhita. Sectarianism is a natural byproduct of the Absolute Truth. When acharyas first ascertain and instruct the truth, it is not polluted with sectarianism. But the rules and regulations received through disciplic succession regarding the goal and the method of achieving it are changed in due course of time according to the mentality and the locale of the people. A rule that is followed by one society is not necessarily accepted in another society. That is why one community is different from another. Then, he goes on, as a community gradually develops more respect for its own standards, it develops hatred towards other communities and considers their standards inferior. These sectarian symptoms are seen in all countries since time immemorial. That's the problem. So what's the solution? This is prominent amongst neophytes and found to some extent amongst Madhyama Adhikaris. Amongst Uttama Adhikaris, however, there is no trace of sectarianism. So their solution, become an Uttama Adhikari. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur wrote, this is the very, very first English edition of a bi-monthly, twice per month, publication, Harmonist, in English. Harmony is possible only when one has obtained a firm footing in the Dharma or the function of the soul. He's explaining this same pastime. So there's discord and there's harmony. Sectarianism and harmony. Diversity and unity is where we're going with this discussion. Although swan-like personalities may accept a particular practice from birth or childhood according to instructions they have received, they nevertheless remain indifferent and non-sectarian. There's the opposite. That's the swan-like persons. Then there's the crow-like persons. Prabhupada was explaining this principle one time to a professor, and the professor was from Ireland, and Prabhupada referred to the vase that was on his desk. So I just took a painting of a vase. And you can see in the vase there's some greens and there's some flowers of different colors and different kinds and shades. So with this professor, they were discussing about in Ireland there's been wars for decades between the Protestants and the Catholics, the Northern Irish and the Southern Irish. And they would do bloody wars. So the man was saying to Prabhupada, but Swamiji, you know, your spiritual solution, how are you going to stop wars? And Prabhupada's reply was, sometimes a variety of examples help us to understand or appreciate the problem better. So he pointed to the vase. In the vase, there's a variety of flowers. And that variety helps us better appreciate the idea of flowers. From any point of view, Krishna can resolve all problems. All problems. That is called unity in diversity. Our students come from different backgrounds, but because they are all in Krishna consciousness, they are united. So, taking shelter in Krishna, that's the unity principle, then all kinds of differences may be there, that's the diversity principle. Unity in diversity. In Los Angeles, during a lecture, Prabhupada made a statement that one of our sannyasis refers to all the time because he heard it directly and he liked it. One sign of intelligence is the ability to hold opposing points within the mind, which is very nice. Because the mind, those of you that know something about computers, the mind is a binary processor. In fact, computers are intended to replicate the functions of the mind, which is a one or a zero. So it's just like, you know, the light switch. The light switch is either on or off. It's a binary switch, on or off, one or a zero. That's what the mind can do. But intelligence can hold two opposing views, the one and the zero, or two opposite notions at the same time. That's not the function of the mind, it's a function of intelligence. It can hold in the mind two opposing points. You can't say it. And conversely, while there's diversity, let's say in our society of devotees, there's diversity. And it's very easy for groups to form within the society of anybody, any group of people. It takes some intelligence, in our case specifically, with spiritual organizations, some spiritual intelligence, to be able to appreciate and recognize two opposing point of views at the same time. That's Prabhupada said from the Vyasa side. So a goal to strive for is this unity in diversity principle. It's something that Prabhupada requested. There's a very famous letter, in fact, that Prabhupada wrote to one of his temple presidents, Karandar. Please try to maintain the philosophy of unity in diversity. That will make our movement successful. Letter of 1973. So I was searching for some different graphic designs that show this unity and diversity principle. Here's one that was nice. Here's another one that's nice. And to help us achieve that unity factor, the chanting of the holy name. A symptom of properly hearing the holy name and Krishna Katha is that we become free from the propensity to criticize others and sectarianism. This is directly Bhaktisiddhanta. Now, so at the center of this unity principle, the holy name, given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and in disciplic succession we've all received it. That's the cleansing of the heart and bringing disparate persons closer together, centered upon Krishna. And following that, I like this image here. This is the Chaitanya tree where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was both a gardener and the tree. And the watering process is the chanting of the holy name. And as the Chaitanya tree grew, there's principal branches and sub-branches, and various fruits of love of God were produced. And those fruits of love of God, there were so many recipients of the fruits of love of God. But it all starts with this very simple, sublime activity of chanting Krishna's holy name. And another concluding image here, just for graphic purposes. We, in our lives, we make choices of what we want to do, how we want to live, values that we'll hold, standards that we'll uphold and live by. Of course, ideal is we receive those in descending fashion. We're coming from a material circumstance where spiritual principle isn't what prevails. The world around us doesn't, it's not conducive for upholding spiritual principle. It takes a great deal of conviction within, and also takes a great deal of mercy. So that's the presentation on Krishna swallowing the forest fire of sectarianism. Now, one thing, we can turn the light back on. This principle of unity in diversity. I was busy with something else. I didn't attend Vrajavihari's presentation during this past week. During the past week, we were attending GBC meetings in Chicago, and every morning, every evening, there were specific topics spoken on by different devotees. Vrajavihari spoke on this unity in and diversity principle. And I received feedback from some devotees that that was one of their favorites. I didn't even see it, so I can't call it a favorite. But it was really liked. It's not the same topic, but, you know, he made his particular presentation on this topic. So that I asked somebody to send out links for each and every one of the classes. So they're uploaded and you can see, and at some point it will get sent out. They have to. The system that was being used before Google started clamping down on allowing bulk mail started bouncing. Wouldn't even go into spam box. It's just like they blocked it. So if you get some request to, you know, do you want to be a participant in a Google group, then you'll start getting these things again, hopefully. Unity and diversity. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Maharaj, I have a lot of questions brewing, so you can tell how much time I have. In the beginning you were describing Nitya Leela and Nainmittika Leela.
Yes.
So I'm confused because Nainmittika Leela are occasional pastimes, for example, demons, Krishna leaving Vrindavan. Now, my understanding is that these pastimes happen in different universes, different times Krishna does these pastimes.
Yeah, but they happen in the universe, but there's Goloka. Krishna's Bhoma Leela in the created world, these are the occasional. Now, there's two. Like, you know, Krishna's going into the forest with the cowherd boys and playing, or Krishna's performing rasa dance, etc., etc. These are Nitya Leela. There are also, in this world, some occasional pastimes. Occasional meaning they're not exactly found in the spiritual world. There's some detail. The detail is, although there's no demons in Goloka, there's the bhava, the mood, the sense that there's demons. And details to that. There's no birth pastime, but Mother Jasoda is for sure and certain that Krishna is her son. So there's the bhava that Krishna has born, but there's no pastime. So therefore, there's a pastime. There's demons. Krishna is born. The pastime of that. And those Naimitika Lila go on in different universes wherever Krishna performs his worldly pastimes. Okay. What else?
So this was a discussion I had with someone who is a devout Christian, mm-hmm. but comes to the temple as an appreciator of the Hare Krishna movement.
Mm-hmm.
So she was expressing that, you know, in different faiths, you know, obviously when there's a sermon going on, nobody's going to, hopefully they're not going to say bad things about another faith. But there is an internal conviction that their own faith is the highest. So, you know, when she goes to the church, you know, the sermon is being given from the standpoint that, you know, this is the highest truth.
Yeah.
Come to the Hare Krishna temple and we say, chanting the holy name, this is the prophet for Kali Yuga. So, even though there is an expression of respect, you know, of different faiths, you know, but there's definitely, I mean, it seems there's this feeling of sectarianism, you know, somewhere in there. And you were describing that is true of neophytes and...
Mm-hmm.
Madhiman, and is not true in the Uttamadhikari level. Could you comment, Maharaj, on how to respond to something like that? You know, we respect every soul's journey. So if, you know, that is your path, you know, like Prabhupada says, be a good Christian. And yet, we say the chant of the holy name is the highest. So, there seems to be a dichotomy there.
It depends on the mood in which it's said, not the message itself. When I was growing up as a Christian, there's this passage where it's called the Sermon of the Mount. The disciples were with Christ and they were on this mount something or other, and he was asked, of all the different teachings that you've given, what's the most important of your teachings? It's the answer is bhakti. Love God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength. And love your neighbor as yourself. And it's, you know, that the teaching isn't a different teaching. And then what is some prayer that we can say? So he gave a prayer. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. There's a great deal of emphasis in biblical teaching of calling of the name of God, not in vain, but, you know, meaning it like in vanity or in blasphemy, but in glorification. Satyaraj wrote one of his many books was that the role of the name in the various religions of the world, and it's abundant in Christianity. Now, why do we make that particular emphasis? Because the scripture makes that particular emphasis. It's the Yuga Dharma. Now, it's not that language is not there in Christianity, but emphasis on glorifying and singing and praising and hallowing the name of God. It's there. It's not a condescending perspective. It's a glorification. Now, what I said was, it's the message itself is not disrespectful. It may be the attitude of the person speaking it may be disrespectful or condescending. But the chanting of God's holy name is universal. I can give so many examples, anecdotal examples, but it's just the principle. It's universal. Now, there are some elements in any teaching that are unique, in one sense. You have the uniqueness of Christianity accepting Christ in a particular way. Now, if one is mature, and there's immature and there's mature, there's the conditioner and there's the uttama. So for someone who is mature, I've had discussions with mature Christians where I've explained that's the very same principle as within our religion. The religious teaching says you can't approach God directly, you must approach through his representative, and his beloved representative can connect you with the Supreme. Same principle. And within your religion, that person is Christ. And with our religion, that person is our spiritual master and the disciplic succession, our line of acharyas. Then let's take another step for a mature person. That is, the principle of disciplic succession is actually within Christianity, but it's been broken. Meaning, what Christ did was he taught the multitudes, but he particularly instructed his 12 disciples, principal disciples, and essentially said, you go forth and teach others just as I have taught you, which they did. There's record, historical record. They taught as they heard from him. And that teaching then produced disciples. And then they were instructed, you go forward and teach others just as we have taught you. And somewhere along the line, so many things have changed because disciplic succession is broken. It doesn't mean, what was originally taught is less, but there's so many things have changed. So many things without disciplic succession. So we value very much disciplic succession, not just a supremely pure person, but the continuation of the teachings in an unbroken manner. That's within the Christian tradition. It just didn't continue for some reason. It's good that this interfaith kind of interaction takes place, because those who are immature, or the kanishta personalities, taking a haughty view of their position in contrast with others, or the sectarian view, as it's being said here. That person will say, well, hey, wait a minute. It's good for them to say that. At the same time, no harm that somebody is particularly enthusiastic for their perspective. They express enthusiastically their perspective. And these views on these things change. Something that I've learned from interacting with university students, there's the current politically correct view on these things is you can be as enthusiastic as you like about your own tradition, just don't be critical of others' tradition. Be it, say it, express it, honor it, just don't put down others. And when it looked like somebody's putting down others, then you just cross the politically correct line and they'll blow a whistle. And in one sense, rightly so. Anything else? Yes?
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. I was just thinking on this Naimittika Leela.
Yeah.
So it happens occasionally in different universes. So my question is, does that differ in each universe or the same that repeats in like some pastimes? Or some pastimes doesn't happens in other universes, which happens in particular universe occasionally?
That's not what the word occasional means. It doesn't mean sometimes, sometimes not, sometimes, sometimes not. That's not the implication. The implication is, in contrast to Nitya Lila, it's like, you know, as opposed to that which is eternally going on, there's that which is that which appears in this world, which doesn't go on in the spiritual world. That's the meaning, that's the implication. As in demons. And as, well, you know, Krishna, one of the ones he mentions, Krishna doesn't leave Vrindavan in Goloka. It's a pastime here. Because he goes to kill Kamsa. There's no Kamsa to go and kill. He doesn't leave. He stays eternally in Vrindavan. There are pastimes where, but to have the mood of separation from Krishna, Krishna may make some pastime where the gopis or the residents of Vrindavan are feeling separation from him. The bhava is there without the lila. There's the mood, but not Krishna never leaves. Anyway, are there pastimes that take place in this universe that do not take place in other universes or vice versa? I don't know anything from our charge that says anything about that. So, something that Prabhupada has said is the pastimes of Krishna are eternal, at the same time they're variegated. So from that it would seem that there may be some variety of how Krishna conducts a particular pastime, let's say lifting of Govardhan Hill. And the elements or ingredients involved in that lila, they may vary from place to place and time to time. An example is, two examples found in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the pastime that's described by Sanatana Goswami of Krishna's subduing the Keshi demon is, he doesn't, in one pastime, he doesn't kill the Keshi demon, he tames him. And he keeps him in a corral so the boys can go and play horsey riding on the back of Keshi from time to time. And he uses his upper garment as reins and he places that through the nostrils of Keshi and conduct him this way, that way. So there's variety, but there's the theme of his pastimes is consistent. Adi Shakti.
He wanted to show us the qualities of Arjuna Singh. I'm just thinking that for the conditioned souls, Krishna tested us like are we sure? So, what is the deeper message here for us?
Well, the deeper message is Krishna will never put you into a difficulty that you cannot handle. The cowherd boys can handle a lot more than we can. So he puts them in deeper difficulties. And for us, if it's a difficulty. Through the agency of Krishna's internal potency, he places us into. With the difficulty is also the strength and the wisdom, the intelligence, how to address that situation. But you know, it's part of the difficulty is we panic when the situation comes instead of thinking of Krishna. So part of the dynamic is to help us take shelter of Krishna rather than panic, forgetting him. And otherwise, how a devotee is trained, how we're trained to think, whatever may come our way in the form of a difficulty, it's just token. It's a little token reminder of our past misdeeds. And so we can think appropriately. This difficulty that Krishna is sending, he's very kind, it's so minor compared to whatever I should be deserving. I mean, whether we don't know necessarily what it was, what the thing is a reaction to, and something like that. But just it's a principle. It's just like with a loving parent. A loving parent isn't going to harshly and severely, you know, do something to administer discipline. It's like haul off and whack somebody. It's not a loving person isn't going to do that. But a loving person may discipline a dependent for their good. And a loving person knows the threshold of what the person on the receiving end can receive. And, you know, take it as an act of love. A gesture of love.
When we're on the topic of sectarianism, I'm asking as a mother and a teacher, training children. So something I appreciate very much about our philosophy is that it's so clear that there is no fuzziness.
There's no
fuzziness on, you know, what are our principles, what are our convictions. I very much feel there is value in bringing up children in an environment where convictions are very clear and one is steadfast to those, rather than providing an environment to children where there's wavering or instability. At the same time, looking down the road, thinking of, you know, they should not have a holier-than-thou attitude. Could you kindly, what would you recommend?
Compassion. And compassion is not, you know, a condescending spirit. It's a spirit of care. I received something very wonderful, and I'd like to share this something wonderful with someone that may not have had the opportunity to receive this something wonderful. You know, compassion has its innocence. It's not, I'm big and you're small. I'm good and you're not good. But because I'm so good, I'll help make you good too. You know, so not that kind of smugness or snottiness, but compassion.
Ourselves reaching out of that mood of compassion, training our children in that, then we can avoid that holier-than-thou attitude.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. in ourselves, and you know, as you, using the example of you know, being a mother and teacher, within those that we're, you know, we model, we can't like impose our values, but we can model those values, and to the degree that we do, then you know, it, there's a lot of strength that we can pass on. Strength to live by that higher principle rather than succumbing to a lower standard, not only of what I do, but how I view others. Real compassion is an elevated quality. You have something? Yes.
Okay. So I'm a little confused on something. So my understanding is that through the disciplic succession, that the message is the same all the way through.
Yes. Yeah.
So a couple of examples given tonight were that this acharya is commenting this way.
Yes.
This acharya is saying, well,
yes,
possibly this.
Okay.
Possibly. So I'm just, wouldn't it be the same message? So how do I digest this?
Okay, good question. Good question. Diversity is permitted, provided principles are not violated. You have a son. So maybe your son's mother may say this and you may say that. Might happen sometimes. And, you know, but both mother and father have the interest of the son in their, from their own perspective, their own ability. Now that's not the same, but you know, the element of care and love coming from mother and father can be the same, but you know, the perspective that mother sees and the perspective that father sees may be different. It's not so good because, you know, that's, we're conditioned mothers and fathers. In the case of our great acharyas, Bhaktisiddhanta speaks about this. He writes about this in a really, really long, like a 12-page purport in Brahma Samhita, where Jiva Goswami has a certain perspective and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur expressed a different perspective. And his teaching is that one, one shouldn't make the mistake of taking sides and thinking, well, if this one's right, then that one's wrong, and if that one's right, then that the other one's wrong. They can't both be right. But they can both be right. From a transcendental perspective, it can be this or it can be that, and you know, that another possibility, another perspective, is that at different times Krishna performs different pastimes, and then during this particular appearance of Krishna, this is the detail, and that particular appearance of Krishna, that's the, another thing, is the detail. These are explanations, these particular cases that, you know, how did the forest fire start? And it's not conjecture or speculation. It's a perspective on, you know, some disclosure from Krishna, however that happens for these great acharyas. Then it's, you know, an appreciating how, say Jiva, just take this one example. Jiva Goswami is saying, well, Krishna is the cause of all causes, so he created the fire. Now Krishna being the cause of all causes can inspire one of Pralambasura's buddies to start the fire, or be the cause of the fire. And that they're not contradictory statements, just a different way of viewing the same thing. As a for example. There's a very nice section in Chaitanya Charitamrita that I like on this topic, where there's this analysis of the forms of the avatar forms of the Lord that come into this world. And Krishnadas Kaviraj says, in some places it says this, in some places it says that, in some places it says the other thing. And they're not mutually exclusive. And to try to understand how they're not mutually exclusive, that's very good, it's very wholesome. Because they're just different ways of explaining the same thing. But to be able to see that, just like this thing, intelligence is to be able to hold two opposing notions within the mind at the same time. That behind that there has to be some spiritual intelligence. There's something deeper than just what it appears. I may not have that depth of intelligence. Like that. Okay. Yes. Well, that's if you're a cowherd boy.
Taking exact from that, how could you apply that in your daily life?
Well, we shouldn't imitate the consciousness of very, very elevated personalities. Vishwanath, in that particular example, Vishwanath is disclosing and magnifying the super elevated qualities of the residents of Vrindavan. They're not thinking, they're not focused upon their own welfare, they're focused upon Krishna and Krishna's welfare. So practical application is, we're not there yet. And we can appreciate there are very, very qualified persons that qualify them to be Krishna's eternal associates that think like that. Just see how elevated they are. It's Prabhupada says like this, that the closest thing to spiritual love found in the spiritual world is the love of the mother for the child. Because the mother sacrifices everything for the child. Everything. And they love to sacrifice everything for the child. So it's the closest thing to selfless love. And in the spiritual world, it's all selfless love. They're not interested in, their contemplation is not their welfare. Although it sounds like it, sounds like something we might say, Krishna, there's this fire, take the fire away. But their inner thought, being disclosed by Vishwanath, is, we won't be able to bear separation from you. And separation from you is worse than dying. So please remove this forest fire. But the practical application is, just see how wonderful are these residents of Vrindavan. And I'm so far from that. How can I get closer to that? So by meditating upon their qualities. It inspires that quality. Selfless love. Yes.
Thank you for the presentation. In the Kaliya Lila, you were describing how the Nagapatis is sort of a big part of
yes.
for Kaliya. Is there any other reason given like by the Acharyas why Krishna doesn't like kill Kaliya?
Well, he had already relieved him, because Krishna is compassionate. There wasn't a need to. Rather, he relieved him of his envy by dancing at his hoods. And what the wives said is, no one has gotten mercy like this. Who is it that's gotten mercy like this? Why have you, wanting the answer why, but just, you're so merciful to our husband. You placed your feet upon his head, and as envious as he was, I mean, the serpent that was swallowing Nanda Maharaj, Krishna just touched his foot on the serpent's head, and he was relieved of that serpent body, and Nanda Maharaj was saved. Kaliya was really bad. Big time bad. Not just touching his feet, he was smashing and smashing and smashing and smashing for hours. One could say, because he was married to these qualified wives, they were devotees, somehow married to this other person. They were amazed as you are. Why is Krishna doing this? You're so kind to our husband. Then at the end, please forgive him. And of course, he was already forgiven. He was not only forgiven, he was purified. Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.